I'm so bored. I'm so bored. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners and lunch pails, I am simply bereft of energy or enthusiasm this week. I am dictating this to you as my head sits inside my cat's water dish. Ennui bursting the levee that surrounds my soul and flooding it with the thick, creamy pudding of apathy. My cat watches me from his scratching post a few feet away. His thirst for knowledge, his appetite for the lamp-heated smorgasbord of life, his insistence on quoting the works of philosophy that he studies and then pees on, has instilled in me a deep, succulent resentment of his good fortune and his delightful girlfriend, a vivacious and kind 38-year-old dental assistant named Jeanette Gravall. All too often do I find the irksome signifiers, the B-grade bling, that both illustrate and advertise his graceful and utterly exasperating existence. Daily do I trip over the crocs that he sports around the house while steaming lo mein or watching the Discovery Channel. Like clockwork do his copies of the L.L. Bean catalog appear on our coffee table at the beginning of each month, as my cat, DJ Buttons the Big Bank Bomber, flicks through it while marveling aloud at the variety of hunting caps he could be sporting while tracking and killing mice, birds, spiders, and bail jumpers. Listeners, verily do I cherish the time DJ Buttons the Big Bank Bomber spends stalking and praying, because it is a welcome break from his daily chortles at reruns of Two and a Half Men, or his suggestion that anyone who makes a guest appearance on 30 Rock is slumming. Oh, how his utterances drill deep into the reserves of my viscous rage. Curse you, DJ Buttons the Big Bank Bomber, with your insistence on sprinting down the stairs in a rush to not clean your own litter box, and your lackluster New Year's Eve DJ sets. I mean, really, Public Enemy instead of Stetsasonic or Ultramagnetic MCs? Talk about pedestrian. In any case, he watches me curiously now, cocking his head until the pom-pom on the top of his knitted wool cap dips deep into his bowl of tuna fancy feast. It is hard for me to decide what irks me more, his pity or his pan of uneaten vegetarian lasagna that has been sitting on the stove for 2 days without being eaten or placed in the fridge. He now saunters toward me, and while part of me appreciates the concern, part of me is afraid he will begin telling me about how his bike chain broke on the way home from work today, and he had to march his bike past the grumpy Polish man who sits on his stoop and doesn't seem to subscribe to his thought system of paranoid positivity, the belief that positivity is all around you, and it is part of a sinister conspiracy to improve your life. Now he is licking my face and shaving the side of my head that is not submerged in his water bowl. At first I assumed it was to spite me, but he is giving me the double mirror treatment, as any good barber would, and it looks surprisingly edgy. The naturally pleasing 85-degree slope of my skull and the sharp, man-made crater at the back of my cranium ensures that this particular haircut is a geometric delight. The crater on my head, by the way, was part of a government project that the government eventually abandoned halfway through construction because they got bored. I don't know if this experience will lead to a healthier and more open relationship with my cat or his creepy made-up religion called leotardism. I do know one thing, however. At some point, a monologue that started out being about my boredom somehow ended up being entirely about my cat and his inexplicable belief that Patti LaBelle recorded a song called I Want to Go Back to the Future 2, theme from Back to the Future 2. And I think we can all agree that if that is a thing, then there is also a lot of stuff. Episode begin now.
And welcome to Treading the Boards, Kingston's only radio segment on drama, hosted by a woman who once hoisted George F. Walker on his own petard, and 8 other petards to boot. This week, we focus on the historical discovery of a long-lost first draft of Samuel Beckett's classic play, Waiting for Godot. Beckett's masterwork depicts two characters named Vladimir and Estragon who are trapped in an existential void, waiting for a figure named Gatto who never arrives. But a recent search of Beckett's former home has unearthed an earlier version of the play, now housed with the Beckett papers at Trinity College in Dublin, that features an additional character, a carefree rock and roll surfer named the Chipmeister. The Chipmeister's aggressive and irreverent attitude, according to notes from Beckett that were included with the draft, were intended to increase opportunities for Waiting for Godot merchandise, including lunchboxes, a soundtrack album, and wind-up dolls that spout what Beckett referred to as cash phrases. The differences in tone between this first draft and the final version are dramatic. Here, for instance, is the play's first scene with the added presence of the Chipmeister.
Nothing to be done.
I'm beginning to come round to that opinion. All my life I've tried to put it from me, saying, Vladimir, be reasonable. You haven't yet tried everything. And I resumed the struggle. So there you are again, Chipmeister.
Yo, it's the Chipmeister here to hum 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 on your eardrum drums, doodlingers. What's the haps, existentialissimos? You bros look like you got some major angst in your pants. Has this Godo dude showed up yet or what? Man, that guy is outed to the nth degree, am I right, nachos?
I'm glad to see you back. I thought you were gone forever.
Me too.
Me three, muchachos. I hooked up with this surf bunny named Daphne out in San Pedro for a couple weeks. Let's just say she made me see God oh so many times, if you smell what the Chipmeister's steaming.
Together again at last. We'll have to celebrate this. But how?
I'll tell you how. Why don't we chill on my houseboat? I just bought a brand new tattoo machine we can screw around with. But first, we can inhale a little smoke on the water while I play smoke on the water.
Another scene that differs drastically from its final form is the beginning of Act 2, which begins with Vladimir singing a song.
A dog came in the kitchen and stole a crust of bread, then cook up with a ladle and beat him till he was dead.
Dude, that tune is killer. I don't know about you, but I think it's time for a little collabo, my wabbo. Mind if I add some lyrics of my own to that jam? All right, here goes. Philosophers will philosophize about the sexes in a dragon's eyes. The heavy roller wears the crown. The eagle mother wears a heavy frown. It's the bedtime of the beast. The sun is falling in the east. All right, what do you think, Vladimir?
I did not care for it. But then again, one is not master of one's moods.
All right, whatever. Hey man, have you seen my clip anywhere?
Finally, we take a look at the play's final scene, which, in Beckett's original vision, is far more optimistic than the final scene we all know.
Why don't we hang ourselves?
With what?
You haven't got a bit of rope?
No.
Then we can't.
Of course we can't, bros. Look, I don't know about you guys, but I got a lot to live for. I got a sweet Econoline van with Sabbath decals. I got a bodacious canine named Frito-Lay. And I'm totally pretending to get into yoga now. You suicidal broheims are threatening to put the kibosh on my high-bosh.
Well, shall we go?
Pull on your trousers.
What?
Pull on your trousers.
Yeah, come on, dude. Pull on your trousers. No one needs to see you live free and easy and flapping in the breezy. I ain't losing another bro to the tragedy of casual nudity.
Well, shall we go?
Yes, let's go.
Okay, dudes, are we going or what? This weed ain't gonna sell itself to a high school driving instructor. Let's move!
Next time on Treading the Boards, we'll take a look at All Eyes on Me, Stephen Sondheim's new musical biography of Tupac Shakur, starring Nathan Lane as the late rapper and Bee-Wee Neuwirth as the notorious B.I.G. See you then!
Hello. It has been 8 years since I withdrew from society.
following my glorious victory in the category of Best Actor in a Comedy or Musical at the Golden Globes. A lot of people expected me to follow up my rakish and effortlessly charming performance in the big screen adaptation of the Broadway smash Serbian Moron with something even bigger, something that would really capitalize on my growing popularity and escalating star power. But I didn't want to sell out that quickly. I didn't want to just cash in, take that $20 million paycheck in a Michael Bay or Joel Schumacher piece of crud action movie. I didn't want to sign on for a buddy cop movie with Martin Lawrence, where he spends an hour and a half making fun of how small my butt is. I didn't want to do some voiceover in some cheapo, C-grade animated movie, where I play a pornographer who falls in love with the Tooth Fairy, even if I did write the screenplay for it. I wanted to do good, honest work. Work with integrity. Work that I could be proud of. That I could base a career on. I wanted to team up with Scorsese, the Coen brothers, Paul Thomas Anderson. Maybe I wanted to star in an O'Neill revival on The Great White Way. Maybe I wanted to do a cameo in a Romanian movie about a female circus clown who gives birth in an alley, only to later discover that she is a man. In any case, I wanted to do great, important work that would last after I left this earth. And if that meant being unemployed for a while, then so be it. And so I waited. And waited. And waited. The first 3 years were like one long ping-pong game, in the sense that I spent it doing nothing but playing ping-pong. After 2 years spent smacking the ball across my ping-pong table, only to be forced to retrieve the ball myself after every serve, I conceived of a way for the ball to return back to me after every hit by hitting it against a wall, against which it would bounce and carom back in my direction. So, that was 2005. 2006 through 2008 were largely spent sculpting a statue of Roger Troutman out of a pile of stale chocolate syrup. I can't remember the inspiration for this myself, but friends tell me I did it for charity, the R. Kelly groupie I met during one of my periodic visits to the East Hollywood Kennel for Underperforming Canine Thingabobs, as I searched in vain for a doggy companion named Stevedore Bloggins, who was smart enough to turn a blind eye to certain atrocities. After finally giving up this project in 2008, after no fewer than 8 members of area Boy Scout troops were swallowed up by my misshapen confectionery creation, I spent the last 3 years drawing things on my hip. Kinda like tattoos, except some of them are really disgusting in a hilarious way, so I call them scatoos. And some of them are little drawings of Desmond Dekker talking to animals, so I call them scatoos. As of 2 weeks ago, I finally reached my goal of 400 body scrawls, after which I realized how much I miss acting, that noble calling that separates kings from emperors, lions from leopards, and nude scooter mechanics from the Wendy's shift managers who love them. And so, I have emerged into the public consciousness once more, soliciting scripts from all who would have me. Are you casting for an industrial film that illustrates the benefits of losing both your thumbs to a scroll saw accident? Sign me up! Is your high school production of Noises Off in danger of being shut down by the school board for its use of fascist imagery? Bring me on board, and I'll see to it that your creepy and friendless drama teacher's vision makes it to the stage and sells out that auditorium. Looking for someone to class up that documentary you're making about that guy who sleeps in the abandoned train station? I can be a talking head who says things like, "This man has been bludgeoned by the blackjack of society." I'll do anything, with only one completely reasonable stipulation. Your film must be shot by famed cinematographer Vilmos Zsigmond. I'm back, world. Get your flashbulbs at the ready and prepare to see me in your dreams, or your hunger-induced hallucinations.